Industrialization has given rise to Wonder Breads in plastic bags. Yet some still hunger for the old ways of fresh local breads. This leads us to ask, what kind of hunger can only be satisfied with fresh local bread?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 554th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Firenze who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Jackson on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Pleasure to be here, Michael.
Also, Carol Stafford on the phones.
Hello.
Parmley Taff on sales.
Hello.
Kelsey Olson on the stories.
Good morning.
Folks, gosh, in Tales from a Tin Can, which is my recently released oral history of a World War II U.S. Navy destroyer, my father, Robert Olson, tells a story about local bread that made me very hungry. This story takes place up in the Bering Sea, and to understand the import of the story, you really have to kind of put yourself there. For those of you who watch TV, the Bering Sea is where they filmed the Deadliest Catch, a series about crab fishermen. It's up above the Aleutian Islands, and west of Alaska, way out there in the coldest part of the world. My father's ship, the USS Dale, was stationed in the Bering Sea for 9 months in 1943, and of that 9 months, only 12 hours were spent ashore. So you got to imagine, 9 full months on the Bering Sea. My father's job on the ship was to make the steam that propelled the Dale through those terrifying seas. He worked nights, but that really didn't make any difference because in the winter there was no days anyway. Also aboard the Dale was an Amish baker named John Overholt, and every night Overholt would bake Navy bread the Amish way for the next day's mess decks. Father tells how he became very adept at sneaking up to Overholt's galley in the middle of the night and stealing a couple of loaves of breads for his mates down in the fire room. Down below, those thick slices of steel hot bread would be slathered with butter and jam, and then feasted on by the crew of the fire room. So delicious was Overholt's Navy bread, baked the Amish way, that those guys down in the fire room soon became known around the ship as the Fire Room Fat Boys. Now, I also had a mom who used to bake bread, and so I knew what that delicious homemade bread is like. But for years now, it's been kind of an industrial bread in plastic bags, and those loaves just do not satisfy the way those home-baked breads did. And recently, a story about home-baked breads or local breads has come my way in a book by Daniel Leader called Local Breads. And I got hungry again and got to thinking, what kind of hunger can only be satisfied with local breads? And here to help us find an answer, we have Daniel Leader, who is the author of Local Breads and also the baker-in-chief of Bread Alone. Daniel, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you so much for inviting me today. That is a great story.
Well, you know, it was. Can you imagine how precious that fresh baked bread must have tasted to those guys living on a big chunk of steel out in the middle of the Bering Sea, and nothing could have been more precious to them when it gets right down to it.
My travels in researching this book, I went to visit an area in south central France called the Auvergne. And I went to a wheat festival where the farmers invited local people to come to the farm. And the way they celebrated the festival was they ground up some of the wheat and they brought a World War I vintage rolling bread oven that looked like some kind of carriage, you know, or an old stagecoach, mm-hmm. except it had a firebox in it, and it had three levels, and the bakers would follow the troops in World War I with this contraption so they could have fresh bread.
Only the French, right? How great. What a great story. And speaking of wheat festivals, is this something that's taking place around the world? Because when I put out the press release on this radio program, I had a gal from British Columbia write and said that she's doing a big, huge, giant wheat and bread festival up in British Columbia. And I got to thinking, that's a great excuse to go to British Columbia if you ever needed an excuse to go there. But so do they have wheat festivals like this around the world now?
Well, there are wheat and baking associations nearly everywhere, certainly every country that I visited on my trip. And it seems that they're very individualized, and that, yeah, there's harvest festivals in Alsace, and I know they have this they called Farm to Farm in Auvergne. I've been to wheat festivals in Italy. I wouldn't say they're connected, but it does seem that there's this movement towards celebrating harvest and celebrating local foods in communities everywhere. They're small movements, but it seems to be gaining steam.
Kind of growing like yeast molds, right?
Like wild yeast, like sourdough. It grows spontaneously.
Well, Daniel Leder, you're the baker-in-chief of Bread Alone. Tell us about your bakery.
Bread Alone is based in the Catskill Mountains of New York State, not far from Woodstock. And we are a wholesale and retail bakery. We're based on the principle of making old-world-style European bread. We built our bakery literally around two large wood-fired brick ovens that I had made by a mason who we brought over from Paris about 20 years ago, and the bakery has expanded around those ovens. We sell our bread to supermarkets, specialty food stores, restaurants, and we also sell our bread in farmers markets from Albany to Brooklyn.
Wow. So what, 47 farmers markets?
I think we do 34 different locations a week. I'm not sure how many individual markets that is.
Wow.
But more and more of our bread sales are through direct sales to through farmers markets, you know, in Dutchess County, Westchester County, Putnam County. We do some markets in Brooklyn on Saturdays that are just, it's almost like they're food festivals every single Saturday.
And we want to get back to those food festivals a little bit later. Let's talk a little bit about Bread Alone now. You traveled to Europe quite a bit to discover the old world breads. What do you mean by old world breads?
Well, the premise of my recent book, Local Bread, was to go across Europe searching out bakers who either are bakeries that have fathers and grandfathers were bakers, so I'm visiting places where the recipes have been handed down through the generations, and bakeries that perhaps represent the best of traditional breads of that area, because bread baking varies a lot from region to region and country to country. And then I also found in my travels that there were a lot of bakers similar to myself, people who became very enamored with old world bread and literally brought those old traditions to life. An example would be a man who I met who was from Portugal originally, who lives in Clermont-Ferrand in Auvergne, France. And he has won, his name is Amandio Pimento, and he won the highest bread baking award you can win in France, called the Millevrier de France. And he was not even French, and he has become like almost like the poster child or poster baker for this renaissance of old world bread in a fairly small community. And his bakery has over 1,000 customers a day. Just one little bakery.
In one little village.
Well, Clermont-Ferrand is not a village. It's the capital of Auvergne, but Auvergne is not a, you know, very populated area of France. You know, it's kind of like the back roads, you know?
Well, you know, in your book, Breads Alone, you have a lot of beautiful pictures of breads. And one of the breads that really caught everybody's attention here is the little blue cheese rye.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that before we go to the break.
Yeah.
While my mouth waters.
Okay. That was another baker named Pierre Nourry, who is in a little town called Albarat. Now, that's really a tiny town in the middle of nowhere. And he took this traditional rye bread that they made and literally folded a local blue cheese into the bread. So if you talk about local, it was local wheat, local rye, local cheese, all folded together into one great bread.
Wow. Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking breads alone here with the Bread Alone guy himself, Daniel Leader, who is the author of Local Breads and the baker-in-chief of Breads Alone in the New York area. And we're talking with you, too. Pick up your phone and join us today if you have any questions about bread, because we're going to be looking at breads of the world, local breads of the world. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665. That's 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Any questions about bread, we have the bread guy, Daniel Leader. Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Hey, we're back. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain. Today we're talking about freshly baked breads. Folks, when's the last time you bit into a freshly baked loaf of bread? Slathered with real butter and some jam. Oh my goodness, it doesn't get much better than that, does it? Give us a ring today and tell us your bread story. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have Daniel Leader, who is the author of Local Breads and also the baker-in-chief of Bread Alone, a cafe and bakery in the Catskills of New York State. And today we're talking a little bit about what makes those homemade breads so special. And I've got to ask you, Daniel, you know, there are a lot of industrial artisan bakeries now. You can go to the supermarket and you can get a lot of different kinds of breads there. But somehow they just have not been doing it for me the way those, you know, the local bakeries. The distance makes a difference for some reason. Why is that? What am I missing?
Well, you know, and I'm not here to knock industrial bakeries. I mean, there's a lot of large industrial par-bake artisan-style bakeries out there. But I always say to people, it's like comparing apples and oranges, okay? If you go to a bakery where the baker is really taking the time to make bread in very traditional ways, and one of the secrets to really the best-tasting artisan bread are breads that have a lot of water in them, meaning that there's a high proportion of water to flour.
Ooh, what is that? What does that mean now?
Well, it means that if you think about for every kilo of flour, okay, where a commercial bakery has to have the dough firmer and drier in order to have the dough processed through all the machinery. An artisan baker, because he's handling the bread and it with his hands in a very delicate manner, can have a much more delicate dough. And the more delicate the dough, and the longer you ferment the dough, the richer the flavor, the crisper the crust. And I often say that when you see bread that is truly handmade, it's almost like you can see the baker's fingerprint in the bread. And you know, industrial bread, even the highest quality, par-baked, frozen, artisan-style bread, first of all, it never touches human hands. And second of all, if you look at it from the point of view of energy and distribution, it's made in a factory, you know, tons and tons of bread per hour. It's held in a storage freezer. It has to be brought from the freezer in a frozen truck to your local supermarket. It has to be stored there. The bakery in the supermarket literally takes the bread out of the freezer and puts it in the oven. So it may give the illusion of freshly baked bread. It's really freshly warm bread.
Well, there it is, I guess. You know, I often talk about food with its farmer's face on it. So when you talk about bread with its baker's fingers on it, it rings true kind of to me. How do location and tradition influence the baking of local breads throughout the world? You did a lot of traveling throughout Europe.
What's very interesting is that in some ways, the European bread culture and movement is much more established than it is in the States, and at the same time, it's much more industrialized. So you certainly will find many more traditional bakers in France and Italy and Germany and Austria than you will in the States, but you will also find a bread culture that's been much more industrialized because most modern bread technology is developed in Europe. But what's been very interesting for me is that although you have these completely contradictory or opposing forces, here you have bakers, you know, steeped in tradition, mm-hmm. making bread the best way they know how, using the recipes and the local ingredients from their particular region. And at the same time, you have them competing against these large industrial par-baked frozen artisan bakeries. And what's been interesting is that if you look at the history of bread making in Europe, say, over the past 20 years, I would say in the early 80s through the early 90s, that par-baked frozen culture was really putting many, many small bakers out of business. And what's happened, I would say, in the last 10, 12 years, is that small bakers who are fighting back are actually improving what they're doing, okay?
Mm. So the competition is actually making them better.
Exactly. And I'm not saying it's an easy fight because, you know, convenience is everything in this modern world.
Right.
But there are pockets where you'll see one artisan baker open up and do very well, or a son will take over his father's bakery and revitalize that business. Or, like I mentioned before, this guy Mondio Pimento, the Portuguese guy in Auvergne, France, his bakery is a sensation. It's like a local phenomenon. Okay.
What did he bring to that community?
What he did is he did research on typical breads from Auvergne, and he researched them. He met other bakers. He went to baking school, and he made a commitment to making bread, you know, this high art of artisanal bread making. And the community just embraced him, okay? And I've seen this over and over. There's a guy in Paris named Eric Kaiser, a young guy, who's now opened bakeries all over the world. He's got bakeries in Athens and Israel. And because he's based in Paris, he's got people coming to visit him from around the world, and he's selling franchises, but he's not selling a franchise like, you know, you take the bread out of a box. He's selling a franchise. Here's my recipes. Here's how you make the bread. I will send my young people over to teach you how to do it. And he's got a program where he is you know, overseeing these artisanal mm-hmm. bakeries, and I'm not sure how many he has right now. So there definitely is a movement. I mean, my daughter was living in San Francisco for a while, and whenever I would visit, she would take me to visit the best artisan bakeries in San Francisco. But, you know, you have some fabulous, fabulous bakeries there who are really using, you know, Western wheat, you know, traditional,
right.
You know, French and Italian recipes, you know, all European-style equipment, making fabulous bread.
And it's not just the East Coast and the West Coast, too. The heartland is going through this
all over,
renaissance, I mean, of bread baking as well, is it?
Oh, yeah. I would say if you go around the country, I would say that, you know, again, 10, 15 years ago, there was this real kind of movement in the States for bakers to start making more artisan-style breads. And I would say there was a lot of enthusiasm initially
mm-hmm.
and not a lot of experience, and many of these bakers went
right.
out of business.
Right.
But there are, I mean, you can go to every major city, and there will be, you know, several artisanal-style bakeries. I know of them in Chicago, Atlanta, certainly in New York, where, you know, we were one of the first 20 years ago. We probably have, you know, 20 or 30 major competitors now making really high-quality bread.
How do these bakeries transform a community? What happens when,
well,
you know, you open up a bakery like this in a community that doesn't have anything like this?
Well, I think that it's a little bit systemic of the time. Okay, so let's say 10 or 15 years ago, there weren't many artisanal cheesemakers, and there weren't many local farmers making, you know, mescaline mixes and high quality greens and Chinese vegetables. I mean,
right.
And what I think has been happening is that artisanal bread baking has been fitting into this puzzle of local food in a more significant way. Being that I was just in San Francisco recently, my daughter took me to the Perry Building?
The Ferry Building
on a Saturday morning, and there were, I think, three artisanal bakers alongside local chicken farmers, local produce people, local cheesemakers, local sausage makers. And I think that a baker alone, a baker in some communities, maybe it's a couple of farmers and then a baker comes in, and maybe in some communities it's some cheesemakers and the baker comes in. But it seems like there's the piece of this puzzle in local food is bread.
Good. So, folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking bread, local breads, with a local bread guy himself, Daniel Leader, who is the author of Local Breads and also the baker-in-chief of the Bread Alone Bake Cafe and Bakery in the Catskills of New York State. And you, of course, are with us as well. Pick up your phone and join us today with your bread questions, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Bread, fresh, local bread, slathered with butter, local jam. Oh, my goodness, it doesn't get much better than that. And we're talking with a guy today who makes a lot of it and sells a lot of it throughout New York State, Daniel Leader, who's the author of Local Breads, and baker chief of Bread Alone in the Catskills of New York State. Daniel, we're talking a little bit about what makes local breads special, and I kind of got to this a little bit, touched on this before, but take us to Europe and through the various kind of some of the regions. What makes local breads different? I mean, what is it? Is it the environment? Is it what kind of grains can be grown in certain regions? What makes local breads different?
I think if you think about bread, a little bit like you think about wine, all of a sudden it doesn't seem so generic. But
exactly.
I traveled all over France, all over Italy, Germany, Austria, the Czech Republic, Poland, when I was doing research for this book. And the wheat that is grown, say, in Tuscany is very different than the wheat that's grown in Altamura, for example.
How is it different?
Well, first thing, just for one example, would be that in Tuscany, they grow primarily white winter wheat. Okay, it's the color of the wheat, it's the variety of the wheat, and because of the altitude, and they often grow it in between. You'll see in the hills, you'll see wheat fields, and then above a certain altitude, you'll see the vineyards, and you'll also see the olive trees. So you have this mix of wheat, grapes, and olives that is really quite special. And
so it's bread and wine country, isn't it?
It's bread and wine country.
On the vine and in the ground.
Right. But the wheat that they grow in Tuscany does not tend to be a fairly high gluten wheat with a lot of protein in it.
Mm-hmm.
So the flavor is different than higher protein wheats. And also the way they mill it is a little different. And because the breads that they make in Tuscany are very different than, say, the breads that they make in Rome, okay, the recipes are different. They don't even use salt in the breads. They make these saltless Tuscan breads. It's very unique to that region. So you have the local wheat, you have the local mills, and you have the local bakers. Now, if you go down to Altamura, they grow a type of wheat that's called Grano Duro. It's a type of very high gluten durum wheat flour, and they make a lot of pasta from it. So it's like it's almost yellow.
Right.
So the bread's like if you get Penne Altamura in this region, it's made from a different sourdough culture. It's made with salt. It's made from local hard wheat that's milled a specific way, and the bakers there have a different set of traditions than say the bakers in Tuscany. And so the breads are a different shape, a different flavor, a completely different texture. The wild yeast that they cultivate there thrive in that region and won't thrive, say, for example, in Tuscany. And so it really is as different as a white wine from a red wine. Or it's as different from a cheap white wine to a fabulous aged red wine.
So the entire concept then
yeah.
is that local breads, like local wines, developed in response to a particular environment, to the conditions of a particular environment, and therefore really are a way of tasting that environment.
Absolutely. And now what's happened in Italy is they have begun to give the same type of restrictions to the naming of the breads that they do, say, with wine.
Ooh, like an appellation controlee.
Exactly.
Wow.
But they have, for example, in an area called Genzano, they have an IGP, which is it's given by the European Union to local products, okay, that are made in a unique way. So the only place they can use the name Pane Genzano, which are breads made from made in Genzano, following particular set of recipes and techniques. So you can't go to Milan and buy Pane Genzano unless it's been shipped from Genzano to Milan. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
So you are getting some government support in preserving these local names and these local traditions, so that industrial par-baked frozen bakery can't all of a sudden make Pane Genzano and ship truckloads and truckloads of frozen bread to that town and literally close down all
right.
those bakers.
Right. So it's a way of protecting local breads and
exactly.
local environments. Well, folks, we're going to go to the phones right now, and you're invited to participate. If you have any questions about breads or comments about breads, pick up your phones and join us. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're going to go to Rich right now. Rich, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yes, good morning. I had a question regarding all of these small bakeries that you visited over Europe and possibly the United States. Are any of them selling any of their bread over the internet where you could get it shipped like 2-day service or something? And hopefully the bread will still retain its taste and quality?
Well, perhaps the most famous bakery in the world is a bakery called Poilin in Paris. And Pain Poilin ships across the world, and all of that bread is made in wood-fired ovens. They're all large 2-kilo loaves. And if you put in Pain Poilin in your search engine, there are many places that you can buy it, and they ship around the world. I don't know about other bakeries, but if you get my book, or if you even get it from the library, I do talk about particular bakeries in particular areas, and almost everyone has a website now. But I would think that someone in Genzano is shipping bread, and somebody in Altamura is shipping bread. You can always just contact the baker directly. Like, we ship our breads everywhere, and I'm sure that it's with FedEx and UPS everywhere now, that most small bakers would do it.
But how far can you ship before it just doesn't taste right anymore?
Well, it's not really how far; it's how fast.
Okay.
And it also depends on how large the loaf is. One of the reasons this Poilin bakery has been able to ship around the world is they only make bread in 2-kilo loaves. Very large.
Yeah, that's huge. That's almost four pounds, 4 ounces.
Exactly.
Wow.
So those breads, actually, it's best not to eat them the first day, because it's somewhat like wine, or they're sourdough breads, and it's good to let the flavors kind of mellow a bit before you eat them. And those breads can keep, more than a week. And certainly, if you get the bread and cut it in four and put it in your freezer, bread freezes very well and keeps a long time. So we ship all across the country, and if somebody were to, say, call us from Hawaii, we would send that for overnight or second day air, and the bread would arrive in really great shape.
Cool. Rich, you have a follow-up? I'm going to have to take a quick break here.
Yeah, one simple question. What is your favorite musical group? Maybe bread.
Maybe not.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Okay. Thanks for the call, Rich. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking bread with the Bread Alone guy himself, Daniel Leader, author of Local Breads. And you, pick up your phone and join us today. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. When we get back, I'd like to talk with Daniel about what it takes to bake these kinds of breads at home. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. Mike Olson here. This is The Food Chain. We're talking local breads with the Bread Alone guy himself, Daniel Leader, who is the author of Local Breads, a look at the old world breads of the European continent. And boy, I'll tell you, Daniel, they're tearing up your book in here. All the staff is getting a look at some of these breads, and we're all getting really hungry. The one here that really captured my attention is the little blue cheese rye that we talked about a little bit earlier. Oh my goodness, it looks so good. I can't believe it. And it talks about all the time it takes to make these loaves of bread, but it doesn't talk about how little time it takes to eat them.
No, I didn't include that in my book.
So, you know, there was a time in my life when my wife and I were still and going to the university, and we had very little money, but we had some time. And so we got into baking breads, and whenever we would go to parties, we would bake a big loaf of bread and take it to the party as our contribution to things, and they were always a great hit. And of course, being young and rambunctious as we were, we could bake those loaves in shapes that we certainly wouldn't want to these days, but they were always great party to take to a party. And it was fun baking bread. And as we, you know, became more busy in our lives, we don't have, I guess, we think we don't have the time to do those things, but I certainly would like to start again. So where do we start baking our own breads again?
I think the premise of this book was that people love bread. I don't care where you go, what culture, what ethnicity, what income level, people love something about real bread. And you know, you can put two loaves of bread on your counter at home. One being factory made bread, and one bread being one of these handmade breads. And it's almost like a magnetic pull. You want to grab it, you want to smell it, you want to cut it, you want to put cheese on it, you want to put butter on it. It's got an essential human quality that we love. It's almost instinctual. And I think that what I tried to do in this book is to choose a selection of recipes that were very different, very unique, very authentic. And you know, I guess one could make the argument you can't make true Panna Altamura in your kitchen at home. And my argument would be, well, that's true. You can't use that flour, right, that particular wild yeast culture, but the style and the techniques and the tradition that goes into those breads, okay, you can mimic very well. And my goal was to get people making some of these breads to expand the horizon and perhaps bring these traditions into your home.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what's nice about it is it doesn't require a lot of special equipment. In most cases, it requires, you know, you don't even have to buy a mixer to mix. You can knead the breads by hand. It requires
a baker. Which, of course, is really where the art is, isn't it? Kneading?
Well, you know, yes and no. I mean, certainly there's a lot of technique and special qualities that you can put in by hand, but that wouldn't be fair to say that you can't make breads that are as good with your little KitchenAid, you know, mixer kneading the doughs. I mean, the reason a lot of people don't bake bread is because they think it's so much work. And my argument always is it's a lot more weight than work.
Right, then that's what you kind of hint at with respect to the directions on some of these.
Yeah, I mean, from beginning to end, it might be an 8 or 10 hour process, Okay, but in that 8 or 10 hours, there's maybe 15 or 20 minutes of work.
Right.
Okay, so it's really not a lot of work time, and it also does create a different feel in your home. I mean, if you have a nice batch of dough rising, your kitchen smells good, you know, when you're heating up the oven, the mixture of the aroma of the dough rising, and when you put the bread in the oven, and certainly if you have a sourdough culture growing, your kitchen smells alive, and I dare take a person even on the strictest diet and bring them into a kitchen where freshly made bread is sitting on the table. It's almost irresistible. And I'm not saying bread, and the nice thing about these breads is they're not full of sugar and fat and eggs and junk. I mean, these are breads made from primarily whole grains, water, flour, salt. It's
very
healthy.
This, the very basics of life, right?
Exactly.
Well, let's start us off with the grains. I mean, let's say we know nothing about baking our own breads, and we go out to look for flour. What are we looking for?
Well, in most cases, depending on the style of bread that you want to make, certainly breads in Northern Europe tend to use a lot more rye than wheat. But depending on the style of bread that you want to make, let's just say, for example, you were going to make the first recipe in my book, which is a classic French baguette. I recommend using a stone-ground winter wheat flour, and you can actually go to the supermarket now and it'll say unbleached, unbromated, stone ground, and like, for example, King Arthur actually talks about a French style flour. Okay, so the wheat's been blended to in the same style of wheat blend in Europe, but you want to buy flour that is stone ground, without any additives, without any preservatives, without any bromate, unbleached, and those always make the best bread.
Okay, so we have our grains, and when we come back, we'll go with water and salt, right?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Pretty simple.
Absolutely.
Okay, folks, Food Chain here. Michael Olson, we're talking breads alone with the bread guy himself, Daniel Leder, author of Local Breads, and you. If you have any questions, give us a ring, and we'll pick you up to finish off the show. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Please do stay tuned. We have a few minutes left and miles to go before we sleep. Michael Olson here with Daniel Leder, the bread guy himself, from Bread Alone in the Catskills of New York State and the author of Local Breads. And we have people on the phones, as usual this time of the program. Let's go to David. David, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Yeah, I have a question about Italian pizza dough. I understand that to make the typical Naples pizza, they use a low-gluten flour. And as a pizza snob and making lots and lots of pizzas, I wonder how can you make a pizza dough with a low gluten flour? And I just wonder if you had any experience with pizza flour.
Absolutely. In Naples, they have special mills that make the grind pizza flour. And you have to think not just quantity of protein. Like in this country, we tend to think we want high protein bread for our flour for our bread. In Europe, they want high-quality protein, not quantity of protein. So they may have a pizza flour that is very extensible, okay? And it creates those very, very crisp, delicious crust that you like in true Naples pizza, but it's not as elastic as our bread. So they have specific types of flour that they use there.
Is that kind of flour available locally? Now I live in Monterey, and can you get it to like Whole Foods or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, actually, in my book, the flour is called Caputo, C-A-P-U-T-O, and if you do a search on Caputo flour, there are several mail order sources where you can buy this flour in the States.
Thank you for the call,
okay,
David.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye-bye. The pizza, David, the pizza guy. Let's go to Craig. Craig, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to ask your guest about alternative things besides wheat, like real lesser-known stuff to make bread. If you could make a really good tasting bread using amaranth or stuff like rice or whatever, maybe he knows of something else if he has experience of doing something like that.
Okay. Well,
alternative grains.
The thing about wheat is that wheat is the only gluten-forming protein. So if you're looking for the elasticity and the structure of traditional bread, you need to have some wheat in it. Having said that, there's a great deal of spelt bread being produced right now. In Germany and Austria, they make a lot of 100% rye bread that are, and I have some of those recipes in my book. So it really depends why you're doing it. If you have a gluten intolerance, some people can eat spelt and some people can't. I've never made rice bread before, but I know it can be made.
Let me ask you about this. I noticed that at the health food stores these days, thank you, Craig, there's a lot of breads with soy in them.
Yes.
Why do they do that?
Well, I think people are looking for more protein in their bread.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a movement in general to put a lot of grain and seeds in bread. So you'll see flaxseed breads, sesame seed breads. You'll see lots of multigrain breads because people want more whole grains in their food.
And what were you talking about, the quality of protein instead of the quantity?
Well, you know, in Europe, they measure the quality of wheat differently than we measure it in this country. In this country, we use a farinograph, and it's kind of a gross measure of how much gluten, how much protein is in the wheat. Where in Europe, we're high-quantity wheat is much less available, they're looking at the quality of protein. So they actually use an alveograph to measure the quality of the protein there. So most of these European-style breads in my book are not using the high protein wheats that American bakers have traditionally used here.
Well, Daniel Leader, this has been a lot of fun. Gosh, I'm terribly hungry now for local breads. So what I'm going to do is go home and eat your book.
Great. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's been
you bet. Local breads, Daniel Leader. Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.